Plus 49.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Plus 49. My name is Sigrid Arteaga and I will be your host this next episode. Moving to another country is always a challenge, no matter how much you have prepared yourself for it. And sometimes you do need a little extra help to go through this process. That's why today we're going to talk to art therapist Nadia Paredes about what it means for our mental health to leave our hometown and how to cope better. But first, let's go to our news highlights. Have you ever have to rush into the stores on a Saturday evening to buy groceries because you forgot that shops are closed on Sundays here in Germany? Well, it might get a little less complicated because Berlin Mayor Kai Wegner has announced plans to expand shops opening hours on Sundays. The goal is to double the number of Sundays when shops in the city can open, known as Verkaufsoffenen Sonntags. Currently, supermarkets, clothing, and furniture stores can only open their doors on 4 Sundays per year. But Wegner aims to increase this to 8. In other news, Langenscheidt Verlag has just revealed the Jugendwort of 2024, Aura. While the word traditional means special aura or charisma of a person, it's used humorously among teenagers. Having aura basically means you're cool or impressive. On the other side, there's also minus aura, which refers to the exact opposite, and it's used for missteps. An example for this will be, I tripped and fell in front of the whole class, minus 500 aura. So technically, you can think of it like a bank account for aura points that you can either lose or gain. Speaking of impressive achievements, the Berlin bartender Maria Gorbachova has just won the title of Best Bartender in the country. The title was part of the annual Mixology Bar Awards for bars in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. Gorbachova is not only making waves in the bartending scene, but also made history as the first woman ever to win this national title. She's currently working at the Green Door Bar here in Schöneberg. The clocks have just set back, and the leaves are starting to fall, a clear sign that the October end is upon us. With this change, Halloween finally arrives. Did you know that this spooky tradition actually dates back to the Celtic pagan festival of Samhain, which was held to mark the beginning of winter? On the night between October 31st and November 1st, it was believed that the veil between the realms of the living and the dead was at its tiniest, allowing supernatural beings and the souls of the deceased to enter our world. In Germany, however, Halloween is particularly associated with Dieter Zschon, who calls himself the father of German Halloween. In 1991, the carnival season in Germany had to be cancelled in response to the outbreak of the Gulf War. As a result, many toy and costume retailers were left with significant financial losses and saw Halloween as a potential solution. Since then, Halloween has become a well-established tradition in Germany, celebrated in various ways. One popular activity is carving scary faces into pumpkins and using them as decorations outside homes. Costumes and Halloween makeup also play a very important role in the celebration. However, unlikely in the US, Germans tend to dress up in a scarier manner, embracing darker themes for their costumes, often even involving fake blood and wounds. The beloved trick-or-treat tradition that you might associate with Halloween, when children run from door to door to ask for candies, exists in Germany as well, although it may not be as common as in the US. The phrase used when asking for sweets is süßes oder saures, sweet or sour, instead of trick or treat. But as Halloween approaches with its spooky decorations and playful traditions, it's interesting to note that October 31st holds significance beyond the costume and candies here in Germany. there's actually another holiday with very important roots on October 31st, the Reformation Day. This celebration dates back to 1517, when Martin Luther nailed 95 theses to the door of this church in Wittenberg, sparking the Protestant Reformation. Additionally, November 1st is celebrated as All Saints' Day in certain regions of Germany, including Baden-Württemberg, Bavaria, North Rhine-Westphalia, Rhineland-Palatinate, and Saarland. It is a very special day today because we're going to talk about art therapy and also about migration. And for that, we have Nadia Paredes, and she is here with us today. And I will let Nadia introduce herself. And what is art therapy? What does she do? And how come this is actually something?
Hello. Well, so my name is Nadia Paredes, and I'm the current president of the American Art Therapy Association. I am a registered art therapist and a licensed marital and family therapist, and I have over 14 years of experience working in the mental health field, providing bicultural, and now I can say tricultural, services to adult immigrants, Latino older adults, and pregnant teenagers. I also teach about cultural communications and art therapy. And I also teach about diversity, equity, and inclusion in universities around the world. And what is art therapy? And I'll give the American art therapy definition of art therapy. It is a mental health profession that enriches the lives of individuals, families, and communities through active art making, the creative process, and applied psychological theory within a psychotherapeutic relationship. So art therapy is a regulated mental health profession in the United States and a recognized profession in many countries around the world. And we can help improve cognitive sensory motor functions. We help increase self-awareness, improve self-esteem, cultivate emotional resilience. We help promote insight, improve social skills, reduce and resolve conflicts. Also, we process trauma, and at the same time, we can support societal and ecological change. And we do all of this through creative expression. So art therapy uses just art to change and improve anything and everything because of its creative nature.
And this is the part that you will probably get a lot, is that I'm not a creative person. Is this type of therapy for me?
Absolutely. So in art therapy, we use kind of like art therapy as a as a language. So we're not using the art for aesthetic purposes. Like, we do not care about your talent or your capacity to create art that is beautiful or that should be hang on a wall. Like, that's not the case. For us is that we use visual communication to express what we need and what we have inside, right? Because, I mean, the saying does say, like, an image says more than 1,000 words. And sometimes imagery can hold contradictions. Sometimes words don't do that. I can feel happy and sad at the same time, but if I say it verbally, I'm already separating the feelings. But with a drawing, those two feelings can coexist and not be separated. And therefore, it's a more integrated experience for the person doing it. So absolutely no talent needed. An art therapist is trained to help you use the art. So it's not like you have to come in with something. Like, I can give you prompts. I will give you prompts, or we call it directives, that I know will help you do what you need to do in your own level.
Sometimes a picture doesn't really explain what you can say with words. And if you're in a different context, you don't need to have that specific word in that other language that you're currently living in. You can just express yourself. And we want to talk about cultural resilience. How can we explain this?
So we all have different experiences of our own culture, right? We as individuals live within different cultures, right? I can be from a country, and that means one culture. But then I also am a woman. So that means I'm part of like women culture. And I can also be, an artist. And then artist has its own culture. Like, being an artist is its own culture. So I live, even within myself, with different cultures. And when I go to the outside world, I will encounter other cultures. And sometimes those cultures are not the same, right? Because our cultures will define some of the rules that we kind of like follow, that we don't really question, we just believe them to be true. It's something you don't question. If you grew up in a Latin American country, for you, not having structure is very common, and you're used to being very creative, right? And you're used to just adapting to whatever is thrown your way. Where you go to European countries, they're used to more structure. Not all of them, right? But if I'm thinking, for example, Germany, structure is key of a part of the culture, right? So when we have to adapt to both cultures that have very different, like, everyday practices, that can cause conflict.
And this is a moment, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is a moment when you start hating the culture you're in. How many times have we heard about that? I do not understand the Germans about this. And this is actually one of the reasons why we have in our program the Ask a German section. Because something that is selbstverständlich, something that is that we didn't ask any questions around it, it defines a culture.
Absolutely, right? So cultures are experienced differently. And I think the best way to do that is through dialogue, right? Like what you're doing, just like, let's ask someone from the local culture what that means so that we can understand why things are done a certain way, right? Because those behaviors and culture, again, come from history, what we've learned, our culture's, you know, traumas are inherited generation to generation. And sometimes we just behave in certain ways because that's how it is. And we don't question it until we do. Right? Until we're confronted with another culture who we're like, wait, where does my thing come from? Where does your thing come from? So that we can start building those bridges, right? Those things where I'm like, okay, I can understand this is happening because of this context. And that is a theme that is recurrent in what is called cultural humility, kind of like acknowledging that we all have our own special cultures and, you know, and that I don't have all the answers for all things in life because it depends on context, not only on kind of like my own self, like experience of the world. So when we talk about kind of like building that resilience in culture is to know that we can adapt, right? And have like create kind of like an understanding of both sides where both sides are equally seen as, you know, as much as it can, right? In some contexts, that's not possible. If I move to another country, some like there will be a dominant culture. Like that's inevitable. It is the dominant culture because it is the culture of the place you're in. But can I sometimes find ways to adapt to that culture in a way that makes sense to my own culture? And I think that's where the resilience is in. Like, how can I adapt my own things to be able to live in this new space that has all these new rules? And where can I actually just do what I need to do, you know, in order for me to stay sane? Because my personal culture matters as well.
So Nadia, we were talking about different types of cultural shocks. I do remember that my first one was going to IKEA because we didn't have IKEA in Mexico. And I tried to build a furniture and I really believed I could do it on myself. And I had this friend with me. Don't laugh. It is true.
It's very true.
It's very true.
Because I'm part of the story. That's why I can laugh about it.
You were not supposed to laugh.
We thought we were so smart. We thought we're like, we got this. We're Mexicans. Of course we can. Of course we could not. Of course. Because we don't follow instructions. That's a problem. Now I do. That lesson was learned. I follow instructions to the T thanks to that. See how art helps? I was like, see how art heals? We built something that fell apart and we learned art. Art therapy right there.
So for those who are hearing us outside and have absolutely no idea what we were just talking about, so our first mutual, even though Nadia was already living outside of Mexico for a while, we went to IKEA, we bought a big furniture and we thought we could do it because, as she said, we're Mexicans. We can do that. And we didn't need to follow the instructions. Who does that? So we did it. And a whole PAX came falling on top of us, crashing in the middle of the room. And we just like went silent and had like the biggest shock in our lives. And we just went to sleep because we couldn't cope with what just happened. And exactly as you can hear, Nadia was laughing because now we laugh about it and we say like, oh, that's why people follow instructions. Now I know what I have to do if I want to make an IKEA event, an IKEA
furniture. It was a closet. It was actually a closet. So imagine the size. It was like a tall wall size closet. Crashed.
So that was my first experience that I had actually with Nadia. But right now that Nadia was talking about all of those experiences, I'm very sure that you have had many others. And I really hope that at any point while you were hearing this with Nadia, that you came up with a couple of examples that we would love to hear. And so if you have, please send us an email. You know where to. For our last segment with Nadia Paredes, I would love to ask you about the process someone goes through when they are migrating, because it's not only about changing your country and your customs, but it's also an internal process. And somehow I do believe that we do not have a lot of information regarding this process and what's happening inside of you, and also how to overcome it or how to come out of it with more strength.
So there's a model that was presented by Dr. Oberg back in the 1960s. So I do want to clarify, this is not my personal model, you know, but I think that really explains kind of like the transition that we go through when we're going through immigration. So the U-curve theory that was introduced by Lisgaard and Oberg back in the 1960s is a model that we can still probably understand as immigrants. So the first, and you know, this, if you're thinking about like the grief process, you know, they also say there it's kind of stages. And I don't want people to think that this is kind of like, oh, step one, step two, step three. Like you can go back and forth between stages. It's not linear. But these are kind of like the things that you might be going through so that we can normalize like, oh, yeah, I'm going through this phase of my immigration process. The first thing that you can think about is probably the honeymoon stage, right? You just arrived in this new country and, you know, and you're kind of like loving all the new experiences, all the novelty, which is, again, very similar to traveling, right? When you're traveling, there's curiosity. You want to know more. You want to understand. However, then comes the phase of that culture shock of not knowing what is going on because of all the daily things. And I can give some examples like, oh, I don't understand why people are so serious about rules, right? When I'm used to being in a country that's not necessarily enforcing the law all the time. Right. So that can be a culture shock or being on time for another example is like Latin American countries. We're used to being late and, you know, and in Germany as a country, it's kind of like, no, you're there on time. So that can be those culture shocks of like when, you know, we move to another country, we're like, wait, I arrived 30 minutes late and it's OK in certain cultures, but in others, it won't be. And then that can cause confusion. So those are the little things going to the supermarket. Again, it's just the daily things where you start to get shocked. Right? It's not like a big thing like politics. It can be the smaller things of like, where do I buy a toothbrush? And in my country, I buy it in the supermarket. And it turns out in this new country, I have to buy it in a pharmacy, right? Like those are the little examples that can cause a sense of not feeling in control of reality, right? And that's why it's a shock and you can feel unsafe. So again, shock can come in many forms and ways that we didn't expect. Then we have that third phase, which is the recovery phase. It's when you kind of start to feel comfortable and somewhat attuned to the things that are happening in the country, in the space. You start to understand how the work culture works. You start to get used to the, oh, I have to be there on time. Or your friends start to know, oh, they will arrive 30 minutes late. It's okay. So we start to kind of like adapt to that environment. And we kind of start to accept that things are done in this new culture in this way. And we're okay with those things that we at first thought were difficult or even weird. And now we're like, oh yeah, this is how things are done here. Like you're no longer overthinking because now you know who to call when, you know, when the street is flooded. And you know that it will take them this amount of time to respond because you've already been in that environment for a while. So you start to get used to it. So it's no longer a shock. You're just kind of like knowing it's not me, it's different from me, but I understand why things work the way they do. And so the last stage that we go through is probably the mastery stage, or that's what they called it. And it's when we start to acculturate to those differences and we actually start to absorb the new culture. We start to bring in those practices for ourselves and we start to notice like, oh, actually these work, like these are very nice for me. So, you know, a great example is for me, I was very shocked that parties had hours, right? I was used to my own culture. We party until we can. No hours to like noise complaints, nothing. And then I come to this new country and it's like, oh no, parties end at a certain time. They last a certain amount of moments. And that would anger me. I was like, why? When I first moved to my first country. And after that, I started to realize like, oh, well, now I know. Hey, until what time is this party? So that, you know, because then we might be able to go to this other event that I wanted to go so we can fit both events. And lastly, and this was very recent for me this year, my kids started school and I was like, can we just make a party that lasts like 2 hours, like from 11 to 2, so that I don't have to entertain more people for more than 2 hours? And I was shocked at my reaction. I was like, oh my God, I did it. Now I want to have schedule to my parties. So that is kind of like an example of how that evolution goes, right? Of going from the different stages of immigration. And again, I've been an immigrant now for over 14 years. So I feel like that's why, again, this is not something you would expect if you just moved. This is not going to happen in the next year or even the next 5 years, right? Like this is a process that takes a lot of time because acculturation is a process of its own, right? So no pressure for yourself to think, oh, I need to get there. It's like, no, you will get there in certain things and others you still will not. In others, you will still be like, nope, I will still do these because I love them.
And if we need a little bit of help during these times, we can always go to art therapy and we can always book a consultation with you. So please, Nadia, give us your details for us to contact you in the future.
Of course. So you can find me in, well, I do Spanish content. So you will find me on Instagram as Revolución Creativa. But if you want access to all my bilingual content, you can always just check my website, which is www.artfooddreamers.com, where you can just find, again, resources in both languages on how to use art to cope. Because I was saying cultures are not binary. It's not a this or that. They are a mix. And art can help you build that bridge of the mix that it means to build, again, that cultural connection and resilience.
Nadia, it was great to have you here with our podcast. Before, of course, we leave and you keep laughing, which is great because it was a very interesting experience and we grew out of it. For us to wrap this up, you can just do your final remarks on reading instructions before.
All right. As we consider, you know, kind of again, navigating culture is very complex. It is not a simple task. We think we know things. And when we arrive at another culture, we don't realize we don't know everything. And, you know, and we want to navigate different spaces as we would know them all, but that is just not possible, right? I think that we do need to have that humility, you know, taking from this experience, having the humility of knowing like, wait, this is something new. We have never tried this before. Maybe we should ask. And I go back to that cultural humility piece, like being humble, knowing that, you know, you're not a know-it-all, knowing that not all answers are given just by you and your life's experience, that there are other lives and other life's experiences in the world, and that we do need, you know, creativity. We do need that to navigate it because it's building a third new concept for yourself, right? It's not A or B. It's an AB. And in order to merge those together, that requires creativity. And what better way than doing it through art?
That's beautiful put. I will just end up saying that maybe sometimes it's not, it looks like it's very far-fetched to say, oh, mix beer with Sprite. And then the Germans do it and it's Radler and it's great. And we love it.
It's like, or we can mix it with lime and salsa, and then we call it a michelada. And it is also very good.
There are a lot of people who hate Mexicans because of that, especially in Germany, but it's okay.
It is different cultures, different contexts. We both use lime. Depend if you use it on a soda or as the fruit. But it is, there we had to add citrus to beer for some reason.
Which just sounds like a little bit of a Werbung and advertisement there, but it's all right. This is part of our podcast from Plus 49 with my dear friend Nadia Paredes. She's our therapist. She's a great friend. She's a great listener. And this is a person who has helped not only myself, but a lot of other people through the migration process, through art therapy. And I definitely recommend that even if she's not currently in Germany, that you take a look at what she can transmit to you through the web, because you will learn a lot. Nadia, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Absolutely.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
Hi, my name is Nadia, and I have a question for you Germans. The first time I visited Germany many, many, many years ago when I was a kid, I remember going to an ice cafe, and I saw that there was spaghetti ice. Why is this? Where did spaghetti ice come from? Because at first I thought it was a savory dish, and then I realized it was all made of ice cream. So thank you for clarifying that.
I have to say, when I was younger, I also thought the ice was real spaghetti and it made no sense to me. Even later, when I knew the spaghetti were actually just vanilla ice cream and the tomato sauce was made out of strawberries instead, I still didn't quite understand the appeal of it. I mean, there's so many ice cream flavors and variants. Why would you choose something that looks like a real meal instead of dessert? But that was exactly the goal of spaghetti ice cream inventor Dario Fontanella. In 1969, in the city of Mannheim, Fontanella wanted to create a sweet replica of the classic Italian dish. However, his inspiration for the dessert was neither German nor Italian, but French. At 17 years old, Fontanella was impressed by his first Mont Blanc, a French chestnut and cream dessert, where the chestnut puree is put through a potato ricer to achieve the slimmest drinks. This gave him the idea to create noodles made of ice cream by pushing them through a spätzle press. The trick is that both the press and the dessert plate have to be ice cold for it to work. The first spaghetti ice Fontanella ever created was made out of pistachio, lemon, and strawberry gelato, and represented the colors of the Italian flag. However, it didn't really look like spaghettis, so he switched to vanilla ice cream instead. Today, around 40 million servings of the creative ice cream are sold each year, and even in the supermarkets, you can buy discount spaghetti ice. Even though this dessert didn't originally come from Italy, it's worth looking at why Germans seem to love Italian food so much. You might even find more pizzerias than traditional German restaurants in some cities. So why is that? One obvious reason is, of course, the delicious flavors and textures, with emphasis on fresh ingredients, that Italian food offers. However, a more prominent factor might be the cultural impact of the World War II. After the war ended, many Italians came to Germany to help rebuild the country, and of course, they brought their culinary traditions with them, which quickly gained popularity among locals. By now, pizza has become an integral part of Germany's fast food cultures, with many Germans enjoying a pizza as a quick meal or snack after a long day at work. So, even though I would still choose another ice cream flavor, I think spaghetti ice has a really creative take on traditional food and brings the Italian spirit with it.
We're ending today's show with some great news for the team of Plus 49. The show won bronze at the International Women in Business Awards. We're so thrilled to have been able to participate and now be honored with this prize. The ceremony will take place in New York next month. So thank you for listening to us, and also a great appreciation to Marlene Bachar, our producer, and as well as for Egan for giving us the space and help. We wish you a great week, a happy Halloween, and a bonito Día de Muertos. Hasta la próxima.